One of the messages of the Four Noble Truths is that you've been making some pretty big mistakes. Everything you do, say, think is for the purpose of happiness, pleasure, well-being. And yet so much of it actually leads to suffering. And when you learn how to admit that fact, then you're ready to grow in the Dharma. But it means you're going to be seeing a lot of things about yourself as you practice that you don't like to see. So the mind needs some nourishment, a good foundation, so that these insights don't knock it off balance. This is why the Buddha discovered that an important part of the path is the sense of pleasure, refreshment that comes from getting the mind in good concentration. And why he has so many different techniques for getting the mind into concentration. Breath is number one. And as John Lee says, it's your home base. All the other meditation methods are foraging places for the mind, places where you go when you have a specific need. But home base is here. Because the breath can be used to create a good sense of well-being in the body. Breathe in, breathe out. You can do it so many different ways, long, short, or in long, out short, out long, fast, slow, heavy, light, deep or shallow, any combination of those. And you can think of the breathing going into different parts of the body. Years back when I had malaria, I realized I was getting some really heavy muscle aches. My breath is getting labored because the malaria parasite basically is eating up the red blood cells that deliver oxygen to the muscles, so the muscles are getting starved. And I realized a lot of the problem had to do with where in my mental picture of the breathing the breath was coming in. And that tended to activate certain muscles, made them do the work. So I learned to change the spot where I thought the breath was coming in, to share the load. So the muscles had been working, got to rest, and other muscles pitched in. Then as they got tired, I could move it again. So how you picture the breath to yourself is an important part of the meditation. It teaches you not only how to picture the breath in a way that allows the breath to be comfortable, but it teaches you about the power of perception. The way you visualize things makes a huge difference in how you actually experience things. And so what we're doing as we meditate is to learn how to focus on the way in which we put the present moment together and do it consciously. And one of the big areas of exploration is going to be the movement of the energy in the body. Because you think about it, when we first got these bodies, we didn't have any language. We had feelings of energy flowing here, flowing there. Some were painful, some were pleasant. It took a long time for us to make any sense out of them. And even before we made sense out of them, we got so there were some that we didn't like. We had our ways of counteracting them, again, without any guidance from anybody else. So some of us learned how to suppress energies, bottle them up, keep a tight lid on things. And that way we exercise some control. But oftentimes that control could become really debilitating and very limiting. But there's a part of the mind that feels threatened. And so one of the ways we have to counteract all that is to adopt some maps, like a John Lee's map, of where the breath flows in the body. And allow the energy to flow. Because sometimes the energy has been held in for so long that it's going to take a while so that the new habit becomes habitual. Because otherwise we just automatically go back to our old ways of holding the body, holding the energy. And doing this pretty unconsciously. Part of the problem is the fact that our society, our culture doesn't talk about these things very much, so we don't have a vocabulary. We don't know how we would discuss it with anybody else. So it's good to pick up some vocabulary from outside and see how it works, and then adjust it to your specific problems, because each of us has a different breath history, how we've been holding things, where we hold the body more tightly, or let it go more loosely. And sometimes you find, as you consciously change the way you think of the breath energies flowing in the body, some memories of the past will come up, I've worked with energies in different parts of the body, and there's going to be a release at some point. And as the energy is released, a memory of a particular accident when I was young came up. The time I got a nail in my foot, another time I fell full face down on a concrete sidewalk. And just somehow I'd been carrying the tension of those accidents around. And once it gets released, it has an impact throughout the body. It's like the body's put together with lots of rubber bands. And you remove one rubber band and it's going to change the pressure on all of them. So there's a lot to explore here. And John Lee, as I said, gives us some pointers. And fortunately, since concentration is meant to be pleasant, if you find that his way of visualizing things doesn't help you, well, try some things on your own. Different spots in the body where you can focus your attention, different images of where the breath energy comes in the body when you breathe in and how it flows to the body. Or you can change it around. Think about the fact that the breath energy actually originates inside. When John Lee talks about the resting spots of the breath, those are also the originating spots. And that's just a handful of the many spots that you could focus on. So when you breathe in, where does the energy seem to start? And as it ripples through the body, where are the places that resist it? Can you open them up? Can you relax them? If you find that in opening them up and relaxing them, your posture gets better, good sign. But we're not here to create perfect posture, but we are here to explore how the body feels from within and how we can make it a pleasant place to stay, a good foundation, so we feel secure in the present moment. Because as I said, the insights we're going to gain can sometimes be pretty painful, especially if you don't like seeing your own stupidity. And John Sawab made that comment. He says, when you talk about avijja, you can call it ignorance, but you can also call it stupidity. Things we do again and again and again. And they cause stress and they cause suffering. But we don't have the imagination to believe that we could stop doing those things and still be happy. There's so many things we do because we feel, well, you just have to do it that way. Even something as simple as the breathing. Or something as simple as how you talk to yourself. The images you hold in mind, your idea of what's really going on in your body, what's really going on in the world outside. A lot of these images can be really debilitating. Yet somehow we believe we have to hold on to them. And of course they're going to shape the way we understand what we should do and shouldn't do. And where we can look for our pleasure, all of which are the different forms of clinging. Sensuality clinging, where we look for pleasure. Views about the nature of the world. Habits and practices are ideas about how things have to be done. And of course, views about the self, who we are, how we identify ourselves. All of these things are things we've been doing subconsciously. and yet they all constitute suffering. And all too often we feel, well, this is just simply the way we have to function. So part of the training is realizing that you don't have to view things that way. You don't have to believe your clingings. And to some extent this is going to be disorienting, because it's through our clingings that we orient ourselves to the world. It's kind of like doing massage work on your mind. You get someone who's really expert at massage, they can rearrange the energies in your body. You come out from a session like that, and sometimes it's hard to maintain your balance as you walk because things don't feel the way they used to. So expect that there will be some surprises as you discover the things you've been holding to and you felt you had to hold to them. We don't suffer simply from our random likes. We also suffer from our ideas about what we have to do in order to function. And so again, it's good to have a good solid basis with the breath so these things don't become disorienting. I was talking with a Vipassana teacher one time, and he asked me, what do you do with students who find that the experience of stream entry is disorienting? And I said, oh, I tell them it's not stream entry. That's what can often happen when you are told that certain things constitute insight and you try to force those views on your mind. But without having an adequate foundation of well-being inside, so the foundation is where you should focus your work, because this is what enables you to accept certain insights that you wouldn't have accepted otherwise, and also to notice how you respond to new insights, because sometimes some new insights can come with a lot of pride. You say, I saw that, I didn't see that before. But then the pride moves in, and that's not part of the path. So if you have the sense of the breath as your framework, as your foundation, you can step back from your insights and evaluate them. As John Lee would say, see where they're true and where they may not be true. Because a lot of things, even in the Buddha's own teachings, even in the Dharma, are good for specific circumstances, specific problems, but not for others. The only two teachings the Buddha said are categorical, i.e. true across the board. One is the principle that skillful action should be developed and unskillful action should be abandoned. The other is the Four Noble Truths, because the duties of the truths hold across the board. But a lot of other teachings have their time and place. The three characteristics, for instance, there are times when you use those perceptions, and other times when you don't, and they can actually get in the way. So you have to have a sense of which teachings are universally true and which ones are true for certain circumstances in your practice. The same goes for your own insights. Ask yourself, when is this insight true and when it might be detrimental to hold on to it? Which, of course, requires you have a place to back off, a place to take your stance, so you don't get sucked into the worlds of your thoughts. This is what the breath provides. So take some time to get on good terms with the breath energies in your body, understand when they're flowing well, when they're not flowing well, and ways in which you can nudge them in the right direction. All too often we have this personal history of really manhandling our breath energies inside and not even realizing what we're doing. But when we're told, okay, allow the energy to flow here, flow there, we try to push it, force it, because that's our way of handling energies in the past. So it takes some while to realize that, okay, you just think, allow. And after all, the energies will flow properly. Which means you relate to the energies in the body in a new way. You listen to them more. And you try to develop a more sophisticated sense of where things should go. And when things are out of balance, how you can bring them back into balance skillfully. Because this teaches you both how to create a sense of well-being in the present moment as your foundation, and about that power of perception. There's a theme in the teachings of the Forest Masters that we're working with the five aggregates. You don't have to work on all five at once. You focus on one. And then as you focus on that one, you begin to realize that the insights you gain there will have implications for the others. And it seems that again and again and again, as we deal with different types of meditation, things come back to that aggregate of perception. And you focus on the body. You see the unattractiveness of the body. You begin to realize the problem is not so much the body, it's your perceptions around the body. You see this clearly. You can be doing analysis and visualize all the different organs, take them apart, put them down on the floor, see what a mess you made. And that's inside your body. It's a big mess. There's pictures of anatomy which show the organs being very discreet, relatively clean. You have to remember in the real body there, they're just awash with blood and lymph. Okay, you can be doing this analysis, and then the mind can just turn directions 180 degrees and see the body is attractive. Same body, and the issue is perception. And then from there you go to, well, what's the desire to have this perception of making the body attractive? Where does that come from? So you start with the body and start digging around to different aggregates. Same when you're dealing with pain. A huge part of the problem of pain is the perception that claims the body. That part of the body says, you or yours, and then this pain has come and invaded it. And it seems to have made itself your perception of that part of the body. In other words, that part of the body and the pain seem to be one and the same thing. We have to learn how to perceive that that's not the case. When you can see the body as one thing and the pain as something else, and your awareness of the two as something else. In other words, when you can develop this perception and see how it really does apply, you find that it loosens up a lot of the tightness and the solidity of the pain. It wears the mind down. So when the mind is still with a sense of ease, it can do this kind of analysis. And get the best results. So try to make this foundation strong. Spend as much time as is necessary to really get to know your breath and the energies in the body. Because they're a huge help in the practice. And the more you develop this sensitivity to the body, then the more sensitive you're going to be to the events in the mind. And that's one of the ways in which concentration leads to insight. And helps to increase the chances that your insights will actually be honest and helpful. Because they have a solid base.